So it was a disappointing loss to the North Melbourne Kangaroos and a somewhat disappointing start to the weekend wrap. We've got Nicky Awol at the moment and Hank's having a few problems. So at the moment it's just me, but we thought we'd kick it along and just get it started. So first of all, let's go through the results so far from the round. It's been an interesting round to say the least. Obviously kicking off on Thursday night with the Tigers just falling over the line against Carlton. Looked like Carlton were going to cause a little upset for a while there, but they ended up winning Richmond by 9 points. Yesterday we had the D's getting up last gasp versus the Giants at the G. We had the Suns easily accounting for the Bombers. We had the Swans surprisingly thumping Collingwood. Certainly stuffed my tips up. The Bullies today at Eddie had absolutely caned the Dockers, and the Power got up at the end over the Saints at Adelaide Oval, so a bit of a sigh of relief for them. All right, but obviously the main cause of concern for us tonight is the game between Crows and the Kangaroos. And before I get into that game, I'll just say that if anyone's around listening, please hop on chat. It is only me at the moment, so any interaction that I can have with you guys would be greatly appreciated. Otherwise, you're just going to have to sit here listening to me rant for half an hour or so. So, first of all, some interesting points that were made on the board, which I'd probably like to go through and just cover off. First of all, obviously, the non-selection of Hartigan and the ultimate, not dominance, but certainly impact of the North Melbourne big men. My own personal view is that I don't think that it made that much of a difference. Drew Petrie went into beast mode a little bit at the end. And obviously, Todd Goldstein caned Sam Jacobs in the last as well. But I think our team defence strategy was relatively obvious from the start. We certainly had multiple players up against Petrie all day. We didn't seem to mind Jared Waite leading up the ground. And Ben Brown sort of chipped in and out with a couple. But there were three clear areas that I thought were the main reason why we ultimately lost the game. And I'd just like to go through a little bit of statistical information and hopefully Danos, if no one else, will appreciate this. If you look at the stats head-to-head, we pretty much played the same game. Our kick-to-handball ratios were the same. Our disposals were relatively even. Disposal efficiency was slightly in their favour, but nothing really to speak of. We had similar inside 50s. Oh, I can hear Hank there. Are you there, mate?
I think so.
You beauty. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I switched on Audio Wizard and I think I got something. So is that all good?
Well, we're live, mate, at the moment, so and we can hear you, so thank God for that. That's fantastic. I was just saying, Hank, I don't know whether you listened to my intro at all.
Yeah, but I heard you.
Yeah, so just going on with the stats a little bit, our clearances were relatively even, our numbers around the stoppages were exactly even. But, Hank, I was just about to mention there was one key area that I felt cost us in the end, and it had nothing to do with selection or anything like that. It was our intensity. I don't know how you saw that, but a couple of the stats that I'd just like to point out. Our midfield engine room, our key six players, so we're talking for us, we're talking Tomo, Brad Crouch, Matt Crouch, Richie Douglas, Rory Sloan and Sam Jacobs versus their main engine room of Cunnington. Hang on, my spreadsheet's just gone spastic. There we go. Yeah, they've got Goldstein, Wells, Cunnington, Swallow, Zeebel and Dal Santo. Their midfield engine room laid 37 tackles to our 24. And I would hazard a guess, without knowing the stats, a lot of those occurred after half time. How did you see that?
Yeah, I thought the intensity wasn't too bad, but as you said, like the tackle count in the end, I think at the end of the game was about minus 20 against us. So clearly they were harder at the ball. I mean, it felt like they were the better team the whole game. So really, to get within 10 points and so many 50-50 opportunities that we pretty much coughed up ourselves to go against us, sort of showed that, you know, I think composure and ill-discipline as well probably let us down. The game was pretty hot throughout the whole match. Like, the ball was going from end to end, and it was a pretty frenetic pace. Clearly the tackle count was one thing that sort of really differed between the two teams. Most of the other stats were even, as you said, but the tackle count and the contested marks were probably the other difference as well.
Mate, you read my mind, but before we just touch on contested marking, the other interesting stat to, if you drill down into the tackling stats a little bit, was their forward pressure versus our forward pressure. Now, overall, and it's a bit hard to gauge just off the stats because players rotate through, but essentially, by my reckoning, their forward line laid approximately 29 tackles to our 17. And if you drill down even further to their big guys, being Petrie, Brown and Waite, versus our big guys, it was 12 to 4.
Yeah, well, looking at that, Walker had one tackle. Jenkins, where's he? He had one as well. So, yeah, you're right. Like, the big guys, you know, they didn't do too badly with the ball, but the one stat that did point out to me was that we had more inside 50s in the last quarter, and yet we were going at 7% to convert those inside 50s for even a behind. So, you know, we weren't actually defeated in that last quarter. We had the ball and we had plenty of opportunities, but going in there wasn't great, and then keeping it in there as well was also another problem. So, you know, having a bit more composure and maybe a bit more system going forward, we could have converted, you know, enough of those entries to you know, hold on to the lead. Because we led all game, really. Like, it's quite incredible that I felt like we were the second best pretty much all game, and yet we really only lost the lead about halfway through the last quarter. So,
yeah, I agree. It had very much a similar feel to the Western Bulldogs final last year. Our inability to take a mark up forward is a real concern. Jenkins got most of his goals off the deck. Tex got his goals mostly on the lead, but from a fair way out, and some of his disposal, both shots at goal and also just in general play, were appalling. I actually felt like our forward line played like a bunch of millionaires, to be honest. And it was it was typified by Eddie Betts's little left foot snap.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to bring up then, yeah.
Yep. He almost looked like he expected to kick it. There was no effort. It was such a critical part of the game, and sure, we ended up scoring not long after anyway. But it was just one of a number of shots at goal that just should not have been missed. And I felt like our blokes believed their own hype pre-season, and they didn't look anywhere near as intense enough.
I mean, like, even, yes, it was a missed shot, but even the way that the ball travelled through the air, it was this floating, you know, pie kick, really, wasn't it? Like, there was no spin or real effort to slot it through the big sticks. It was pretty lazy shot at goal, and for someone like him, usually he nails those. His only goal for the game was a set shot from the boundary, wasn't it? So, is that right?
Yep.
Oh, no, yeah, one goal, three. Yep. So he spent a lot of time in the middle as well, which was a little bit surprising. He had, you know, what did he have, 15 touches, 8 tackles. So he wasn't too bad around the ball, but he didn't really get involved all that much in the forward line, and the only goal he kicked was a miracle. So, yeah, it was an interesting game, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, the shot that we were talking about, he tried to lay it off his left foot, lay it across his left foot and spin it back. The thing is with that is that he had enough time to straighten up and drill it straight at the goal umpire's head, basically. He didn't have to do that. It was lazy and leerising as far as I was concerned, and it typified our forward line all night.
Exactly. Like, Jenkins was probably the only one that really seemed to have any real intensity around the ball, especially that goal. I think we put us 20 points up or something like that, where he shrugged off an opponent, gathered the loose ball, turned around, kicked on his left. That was pretty good in intensity and work ethic there. But a lot of the other players, in the forward 50, probably didn't have the same sort of application.
No, Tommy Lynch was silent. I felt like we really missed Charlie Cameron's intensity around the packs and certainly his defence pressure around the packs. I felt like our structure wasn't right with Eddie playing so high up the ground so often. It just didn't feel as if we were in a position to really defend, and a lot of times we were bombing the ball in, out of it, or what have you, and they would take a mark and out they'd go. It was very frustrating, our forward line not function.
It was a little bit 2014-esque, wasn't it, where like we sort of, as Carl would say on Big Footy, we were winning based on entry and sort of just getting the ball forward rather than any sort of system that would result in scores. So,
yeah.
The fact that we got that close in the end at all is probably almost a good sign, in that we can play poorly and we can have so many players sort of, I guess, off or a bit rusty and still give ourselves a shot at winning. Like, it was 5 points of difference with 90 seconds to go. So it's more frustrating. Like, there's plenty of areas of improvement, but it shows you that we're probably not too far away, even when we're not on song, I guess.
Yeah. I felt it a bit strange that we went one post all night. At no stage did I notice it really try to slow the game down at all. Whether we overestimated our fitness levels, I'm actually a little bit concerned by our fitness levels. They seem to be running on top of the ground at the end of the game. And obviously they had momentum, but we looked a little one pace towards the end of the game. And there's an interesting stat with regards to time on the ground. Their midfielders and our midfielders basically spent between 79 and 81% on the ground, even with their one down on rotations, except for one player. Or two players that offset each other.
4 years.
Scotty Thompson spent 89% of game time on the ground, and Matty Crouch only spent 67% of game time on the ground. What the hell is that all about?
Yeah, I thought I saw that David McKay spent about 60% of the time on ground as well. I mean, he's not one of the engine room midfielders, but yeah, it is strange, isn't it? Like, I mean, Matt Crouch probably was arguably, I don't know, he looked like he was our best player to me, as well as Jenkins. So for someone to, probably win most of the ball and use it reasonably well, and then to only spend, 2/3 of the game actually involved, is not maybe a good sign of rotations and pre-planning, I guess, is it?
Well, when you look at his stats in the context of 67% game time, what do you have? 23 odd disposals, 15 contested possessions, 10 clearances, and 9 of those clearances around the stoppage, a couple of tackles.
And a goal.
And a goal. I mean, his stats certainly stack up against Tomo's, even though Tomo had, 7 more disposals. He certainly had a similar clearance count. It worries me because Scotty Thompson's been in our team for a long, long time, and I just wonder whether there's a bit of pulling rank going on there, and if there is, it needs to be stopped straight away, because we can't have our oldest and slowest midfielder spending nearly 90% of time on the ground at the expense of a young lad who's cutting him up.
Yeah, I mean, super coach numbers are not always the be-all and end-all, but he was our highest scorer, and he wasn't anywhere near our highest scorer in Dream Team. So he's clearly using the ball well and contributing to the team. Be interesting to see all the numbers. Where do you access the time on ground? Is that on Footy or?
I got that on just the AFL.com stats. Yep.
Yeah.
So. Go on.
No, sorry. No, I was just going to say didn't realise that. So, because they're pretty valuable statistics, aren't they? To have just to see.
Absolutely. And the fact that North were able to manage their own ballers despite having Jed Anderson out of the play. They had Dal Santo up for 80 and all the rest of them between 77 and 79%, their main players, Cunnington and Swallow and Zeeble and what have you. So I actually think that was either a severe coaching error on the part of our midfield line coach, or a case of Tomo pulling rank. And if it's the latter, I'm concerned about the cultural impact there. And if it's the former, then someone needs to get their ass kicked, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, not just with Anderson going off, but they had at one stage they had Petrie with a... They weren't off the whole ground, but Thomas did his shoulder, and I think Petrie did some sort of shoulder injury as well at one point. So, at one stage in the game, they seem to have three on the bench.
That's right.
That would have been handy for us, but two of them went back on the ground. But yeah, it's and time on ground, you'd have to think, is something that they pre-plan well before the game starts. It's not, barring injuries which affect your rotations, you'd have to think that they would have a pretty good idea of how much time each player is going to spend on the ground and when they come off and whatnot. So. Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at how we structure up our midfield, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it doesn't make any sense when you purposely pick a team that for a run and gun style game. You leave Hardigan out. You play McKay instead of Lyons, etc., etc. Why would you have your slowest midfielder on the ground for the majority of the time? It just doesn't make any sense to me. And it'll be interesting to see whether that stat is a constant theme during the season or whether it was just a glitch.
Looking at the numbers now, I've got them in front of me, and Crouch was the lowest number, I think, in the whole team.
Yep.
It's certainly stands out, doesn't it? Talia spent 95% of the time, which is obviously, fairly normal for the key backs and the key forwards and whatnot, but most of the other mids are around, as you said, 75. Even Brad Crouch, who was nowhere near as good as Matt, spent 77% of the time on ground. So
that's right.
Brad looked pretty rusty, didn't he? Like, he was sort of... Most of us on Big Footy would have been tearing down the house if he didn't get selected. So I don't think it was a matter of a poor selection there, but he did look like it was the first game in 18 months for him in the AFL. Some of his, he conceded a free after having a mark, on the 50. None of his possessions seemed to really result in positive play for us. And also just he was a bit, wasn't really used to the pace of the game, really. An SANFL trial, there's a fair big difference between that and playing an Etihad against a prelim final team.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what are your thoughts? Do you persevere with him?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, a number of people have said that he's not going to be able to pick up AFL match fitness by playing SANFL, and I think he's clearly got the talent to be part of our, best 22. I think we would persist with him. He's very important to our midfield, and obviously with Dangerfield leaving, we need someone to sort of fill that void in some capacity, and he's one that can. It might take a few games, though, to get up to speed. I'm not sure. So they clearly have enough faith in him if they selected him after one trial, but I think it's going to take a few weeks, obviously.
Yep.
It could just be more of a, you know, just an awareness thing. Like, you know, he might actually have the, he might have the match fitness, but just, you know, when you haven't played AFL for 18 months, you start to, you know, probably forget how quick and how intense it is anyway. Yeah. One game and you can sort of go, oh, okay, well, that's where I need to be at. Let's lift it a gear next week. And it's going to be, you know, obviously probably quicker and more intense with the showdown next week as well.
Yeah, well, that's right. I don't think we can afford to leave him out. The lad, as you say, needs match fitness at an AFL level. Doesn't serve a purpose to run around in SANFL and get sniped. So I think we just got to cop that one. What did you think about the Hartigan non-selection? Where did you fall in the one side or the other?
I sort of wasn't against it in the lead-up. You know, I think Cheney and Lever and Talia all sort of, you know, deserve to be picked. All have, you know, plenty of quality and whatnot. And clearly they went in with a plan to sort of run the ball out of defence. But it was pretty evident that we struggled when the ball went inside 50 high. They had Petrie, Waite and Goldstein, especially Goldstein in the last quarter. He just dominated, you know, when it really counted. And the Goldstein had four contested marks, Waite had three, Petrie had two, and even just one extra body might have been able to prevent maybe two or three of those. Yeah. At least a spoil or something. You don't have to mark it up against them, but there was plenty of times where it looked like a spoil was possible and they just couldn't quite get up there. So, I mean, you would have thought that they would see that coming. You know, maybe they could sort of cover that by being good in other areas, but it'll be interesting to see whether he comes straight back in. You know, we're up against what, Schultz, Dixon, Westhoff.
Yep.
That's a pretty similar lineup to North, and we got probably exposed. It took a while for it to be exposed, but it eventually happened in that last quarter. So,
well, I wouldn't be surprised. The old saying is, tall blokes don't get any shorter, and I think with the drop in rotations, we're seeing a return to old school footy where, you know, fatigue does play a part, and our blokes certainly look a little bit tired at the end.
Oh, there was, you're not just our game, but like, you know, St Kilda today. I'm not sure if you saw that match, but like the Saints were probably the better team for three quarters, and then, you know, with the interchange cap, they absolutely fell in a hole, and you know they were running like with stones in their legs. So Carlton seemed to run out of legs in the last quarter and on Thursday night. We did as well. So there's been quite a few teams so far who have been competitive for three quarters and actually been on top and haven't been able to run out. So like while it's probably resulted in a bit of slow tip to chip football in the last quarter, which is probably not what the AFL want, but it's certainly separating the fit teams from the also rans. And hopefully that's not us, but so far round one hasn't been good on that front, put it that way.
Now, the other, the next question, well, I mean, from my perspective, I think Hartigan's got to come in next week as well. I agree with you. I was looking for a reason, basically. I was looking to see a visible intent that justified his non-selection. I didn't actually mind it. When I read it, I was surprised, obviously, but I thought, okay, I can see the thought process. But it didn't actually materialise on the ground in general play. So whether they didn't execute properly or whether it was an ill-founded plan, I don't know. But I think Hartigan's got to come in next week. Obviously, the big talking point on the big footy boards has been Nathan Van Berlow. What do you reckon?
Oh, I think it's fairly clear to us, to the 48,000 members or however many we have. It's puzzling, put it that way. I don't know how else you can describe it. Cause like I think he had, what was it? 9 disposals.
Yeah.
One of them was pretty good. There was a kick inside 50 that, Jacobs marked. So that was a tick, but he's just, I don't know. He's slow. He doesn't win a lot of the ball. He's not very agile. The game might have suited him 5 years ago when it wasn't as quick, but it's just, I think we can all see it. I would love to, the coaches are never going to publicly describe what their roles are and what they bring to the team, but it would be very interesting to hear what they think they get out of a selection from him. You know, I don't want to, we lost by 10 points to last year's prelim finalists, so I don't want to sort of say that we're a disaster and, you know, it's all downhill from here. And, you know, I thought the big footy board may have reacted a little bit over the top. But his selection seems to be, you know, unexplainable, put it that way.
Look, I agree with you. To be perfectly frank, I don't see a spot for VB in the team anymore. I mean, along with everything that you mentioned, I noticed at least three occasions against North where he squid the ball. The ball was one in particular I remember where the ball was on the ground on the near side wing, and he circled it. He didn't run through the ball. He circled it, and as a consequence, we lost the possession there. It's just once you get to that point where he's of no value off the ball, on the ball, either with the ball or in hand or defending. I there's just no justification for him being there, and you know he's been a great servant of the club, blah 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 blah. But if we want to be a successful club, we have to make these hard calls, and I think the time has come for VB. And certainly, I'd be my call would probably be to bring in Hardigan, push Chaney out to VB's flank, you know, cover off that way with it. I mean, Chaney plays a good chop-out role, and I think it's better balanced with him on that flank rather than VB.
Yeah, selection is going to be interesting. You know, like we've got Riley Knight was probably best on ground in the SANFL, so you'd think he'd be a good chance of coming back. You know, he was arguably one of our best players in the final against the Dogs last year, so he's coming off excellent 2015 form. Charlie Cameron was a bit off the pace I wasn't at the game, but he only had 14 touches and I don't think he kicked a goal in the SNFL. So it's going to be hard for him to come back.
Charlie's come in on the back of that sort of form before, though.
Sorry, what was that? Charlie.
Charlie's come in on the back of that sort of form as well, though.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I think like I'd say Van Berlo's probably, I mean, it's hard. Like we all think it's fairly obvious, but I've got really no faith that that's actually going to happen. So, and Hardigan probably, you know, is a good chance to come back in as well. But who do you drop? Do you drop, you know, it'd be hard to drop Lever. It'd be hard to drop Chaney. You could sort of, as you said, sort of play around with it. Maybe shift Chaney out to more of that, maybe wingish role.
Yeah. I think Chaney plays VB's role. And, Hardigan comes in for that key post, and I think Knights probably comes in for D-Mac, who was the other one I was going to mention.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, what was his stats? 13 touches.
Just used another vanilla.
Yeah, it was sort of, again, like, I don't think he would deserve to be, you know, smashed for his game, but as a lot of people have said, if we're saying he was okay, and okay for him has been a constant theme for the last probably, well, for his entire career, really. He hasn't been a bad player, but he's been a fairly, you know, average performer. 13 touches on the wing or in the middle is not a lot of contribution for someone with his potential. I thought, you know, the clearance stats were pretty even, but it didn't feel like we were very strong in that area. And someone like Lyons, who's been playing well, pretty good in it. He was pretty good in the NAB challenge, especially in that last game. So I'm not sure if he's got a chance to come back in.
Well, he'll probably come back in if one of the Crouch boys misses out, although I think both of them, looking at replays and whatnot, would be a little stiff. We're talking about changes and whatnot, and Cole Chaney gets a bit of a bashing on the boards, but a few stats of his, I mean, 9 contested possessions, 82% disposal efficiency, which is something that a lot of people seem to criticise him for, I think, a little unfairly. Four rebound 50s, 7-1 percenters. I think he's got a role to play. You're always going to get 100% from him, and I think his best is better than Van Berlo's best. The other one that seems to polarise people is Rory Atkins. 18 disposals, 10 contested possessions, 3 clearances, 4 inside 50s. I actually think he didn't do a lot wrong. And not only that, there were times when he showed a poise with the ball that seemed to be lacking across the board with our team. So I don't know whether I'm not seeing something that other people are seeing, but I thought he was okay.
Oh, no, I agree. Yeah, like he clearly looks composed when he's got the ball. 70% disposal efficiency, that's pretty solid for someone who's in the middle. He won the ball well. No, he was definitely one of our, you know, stronger performers on the weekend. And when you've got a young talent like that, you may as well persist with him. You know, we're characterised as a slow team. So to have someone on the outside who can use it well, especially as a lefty, yeah, I think we need to persist with players like that.
Yeah, and he shows courage. I mean, he doesn't mind stepping a player. He doesn't mind putting a ball into a hot zone, like through the corridor or whatever. He doesn't play with fear. And a couple of people on the board said that he doesn't like the hard ball. Well, 10 contested possessions probably refute that statement.
Correct, yeah.
10 contested, 10 uncontested out of... on the night is a pretty good return. So I think he stays in. Tommy Lynch is probably the other one that was disappointing. I think the Roos actually focused on him, knowing that he's our conduit. 11 disposals, 4 marks, 3 clangers, 2 tackles, 2 inside 50s. Just a fair effort from Tom. And another one of these blokes that is so lazy by foot. Seems to want to kick when he's off balance, overestimates his ability, I think, and came unstuck.
Yeah, I think he's obviously a pretty important player for us. You know, he's got the ability to win plenty of the ball, and he's always been that link between the forwards and the midfield. His kicking style is a bit, as you said, a bit lazy. He sort of doesn't seem to kick right through the ball sometimes. You know, that last kick... in the last quarter, I think, when we were 5 points down or something like that, he was on the, you know, it was about outside 50. So it was a long kick, but there was sort of no real penetration to it. And going back to time on ground, he was, 88% of the game he played, and he got 11 touches and went at 50%. So not a good game for Tom. You know, I'm not calling for him to be dropped. I think he's pretty important for our team. But, not an ideal performance there. Did he get on the scoreboard? One goal.
The thing I've noticed with Tommy is that he, and I mentioned this already, I think he's got a fair estimation of his own ability, which is good, but he's lazy. He's lazy by foot, and he turns the ball over a lot. So he's going to need to just tidy that up. The other one that's obviously lazy, I reckon, at the moment, is the Texan.
He had a funny game, didn't he? He's still, you know, when you look at the stats, 18 touches, 10 marks. So he got involved, but, you know, just some of his kicks, either tries to kick it too hard or, you know, he's probably one of the best field kicks for a big man in the league, as we saw... that last kick in the game against the Dogs, you know, kicking across his body, centered it, found the teammate perfectly. You know, on the weekend he had a kick from 20, which was a shocker, and then from 60 he slots it post high. You really don't know what to expect from him. Like, you know, he's sort of, for someone with his ability, it's sort of unpredictable what he's going to produce, put it that way. You can't rely on what's going to happen.
No, and that's been something that's crept into his game since the knee op. He was a very reliable kick up until a couple of years ago. He seems to kick across his body a lot. The commentators pointed out that 20-meter shot that he missed, you know, his follow-through was almost at the point post. you know, I mean, those shots from 20 metres out, they're simple. No one should miss those shots, and certainly not someone on 700K. You know, so he needs to address that quick smart, because that sucks the life out of a team. You know, and the other thing tied in with our forward pressure, both he and Jenkins need to lift their defensive intensity when we don't have the ball. The Roos got it out of our forward 50 very, very easily. And those two guys, when you compare them to North Melbourne's big guys, were certainly non-existent in terms of defensive pressure.
Yeah, as it was characterised, one tackle each for them, which is not, you know, not good enough when you're when the ball. What was it? Their inside 50s were pretty even, and you know, one of the big stats for, you know, teams these days is not just tackles, but where you're tackling and trying to retain that ball inside your forward 50. And it was probably a bit too easy for the ball to come out. Amount of inside 50s we had in that last quarter and couldn't convert is probably one sign of where we fell down in the end.
Yeah. So just finishing off, how did you see the debutants, Miller and McGovern?
Oh, I like McGovern's game. The stats probably don't really show, you know, 9 touches. It's not a whole lot, but, you know, I liked his intensity. He took some great contested marks. He's pretty versatile, can play at either end. Pretty mobile for a big man as well. So, like, he wasn't too bad. Like, for a youngster in his first game, he got a pass mark, put it that way. Miller, I think there's a big difference between playing the West Coast Eagles C grade team at Unley and playing North Melbourne under the roof. And the intensity's off the chart. So when he had the ball, he was fine. He had some good moments, but, you know, obviously you need to win the more. You need to win the ball a bit more and need to find it. So whether he... I'd like to see him retain his spot maybe this week, give him another chance. It's, you know, there's players can't find consistency if they get dropped after one performance. So I'd like to see him play another one and see how he goes. Maybe when Charlie Cameron's up and running, we probably can't run with, you know, him and Charlie. It'll be interesting to see how we balance that forward line. We've got Menzel, Cameron, Betts and Miller now. So plus, you know, the rotating midfielders. We've got plenty of options. It depends, like, if all three or all four small mids are all firing at the same time, how we run with that, you know, how many players get a gig. I mean, obviously, Eddie's always going to get one of the spots, but, you know, how many we can actually run with if we're all at full fitness and performing well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Charlie getting back to back into the team. I think I think we miss him defensively. I liked Mitch McGovern. I thought he brings something to the team that's a little different. He's good overhead. He has some aggression. And, you know, those couple of shots on goal towards the end, they weren't easy shots, but he was there to take them. So he puts himself in the right spot. Miller, I thought what he did really well. He obviously needs to get involved a little bit more, but I'd give him another game, I think. Give him another game. I think at the end of the day, I think my two wins would be Hartigan and Knights. At the expense of VB and DMAC.
Yeah, I think that'd be a popular view. It'd be interesting to see whether DMAC survives, or if either of them survive, really. I mean, the coaches last year, you know, they played more AFL games than they did SANFL, but they've been dropped before, so it's not like they are automatic selections. But it's going to be a big test at the selection table. We'll see where the coaches are really... you know, where their thought process is. There's plenty of people there that have underperformed in the past and underperformed on the weekend. So whether they get another shot, there's plenty of players in the SANFL that, you know, are waiting for their opportunity. You know, Riley Knight had 26 touches and 14 marks.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's shown that he can be, you know, very valuable in the forward line as well. So I think he's one that's definitely got probably one spot in. Ricky Henderson is sort of a bit of a forgotten man at the moment. Like he's probably a bit inconsistent, but gee whiz, his good football is pretty good.
I'd like him in if he was playing forward of the ball. I wouldn't like him down back, but on a wing, absolutely.
Yeah, so maybe we go Henderson for McKay. I'm not sure. Like, it's sort of he's got the ability to play on the wing, and you know he can really rack up the disposals, and he's got speed and pretty long kick as well. So he's just probably vulnerable to those brain fades. One example was he played an excellent showdown last year when we got up by 3 points, but the game sort of turned around when we were up by about 6 goals, and he was kicking out of the defensive 50, and you know, kicked on his back foot, no effort. Wingard marks it, and they get, you know, they get all the momentum back. So,
yeah,
you know, he's needs to sort of, you know, apply the real application that you need for 100% of the game. But he's one that sort of hasn't really been talked about all that much, I would say. So he's probably got another chance of getting back in. He's normally almost automatic best 22 last year. I'm not sure how many games he played, but I don't think he got left out at all, did he?
He had some back issues, didn't he?
Yeah, but he never got dropped, though.
I don't think so.
No.
No. Well, you're right, mate. Selection will be interesting this week. The boards were fun yesterday and today. Lots of good discussion. So hopefully as the year goes on and people get used to this time slot, we'll be able to get some people on to vent on a Sunday evening and get it out of their system. But in the meantime, mate, I reckon that's about it for us.
Sounds good. Hopefully I can figure out how to log in next time. I have no idea why it all went belly up for me, but the funny thing is when we were trying to log in at the start, I could hear myself talk about a second after I spoke, and I haven't got that at all now, so I don't know how I fixed it or why it was wrong at the start, but anyway, we're all good to go.
Who knows? And Nikki, when you listen to this or when you surface, I hope everything's okay, but assuming everything is, there's a big fine coming your way, sunshine. Anyway, mate, on that note, we'll call it a night, and we'll see you on the big footy boards.
Sounds good.